Hi there, it's Davinia here, and this season we're proud to be partnering with Nosso, an awesome new app created to help parents invest for their children's futures with the support of their close family and friends. Nosso offers investment products like junior stocks and shares ISAs, as well as general investment accounts and much more. They make gifting from family and friends super memorable with messages and photos, which means any money you gift on behalf of children has a lasting legacy. Just remember that as with all investing, your money is at risk. You can find out more about Nosso via the link in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by Gillian Wells. Gillian is a social worker, mental health expert, DE&I wellness consultant and speaker. She is based in Canada. Gillian, thank you for being here today. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Thank you for having me. I don't even know where to go. Like, because, you know, introductions are so bizarre, right? Like, I end up having to talk about myself. The only thing I would add to that is I've been doing this for a really long time, which kind of ages me, I think. But, you know, over 20 years, mental health expert, I get to sit with clients on a daily and weekly basis, and they invite me into their experiences. So, you know, I just really come with this wonderful, rich amount of collected, not just data and themes, but actual stories. And, you know, part of me is a bit of a storyteller. So this is just a really great opportunity to chat with you.
Yes. And I think one, I guess, secret that I'd like to let the Rainmakers in on is that Gillian and I first met very randomly when Gillian approached me about some one-to-one coaching. And so Gillian and I have been working together for the last couple of months. And honestly, I hope that you will get just a glimmer of some of the joy, the vibrancy and the zestiness that always leaps out when we connect and we collaborate. We always have brilliant conversations. Quite often it feels that Gillian is coaching me as much as I'm coaching her, but that's another story. You've heard all about her expertise already, so we're going to get into it right now. So Gillian, I mean, you are a highly accomplished professional woman, like lots of the Rainmakers that will be listening in. You've had a really successful career and you're building a thriving business. But who is Gillian outside these kind of societal hallmarks of success?
Oh, you know what? What an interesting question, because I love how you sort of open it. You're like, okay, define yourself. But by the way, we're going to take those societal hallmarks of success and move them to the side.
Right.
Like, well, I don't get it. Then who am I? Like, why are you stripping me down naked like this? Right. I don't understand. Isn't like, am I not supposed to sort of lead with all my accomplishments? Mm-hmm. So I just really like that question. You know, you're really asking me to go deep and sort of figure out like kind of who I am. It's kind of this existential question that opens up. You know, I'm going to say busy, packed, scheduled individual, but I'm actually a lifelong learner, book club members, almost 10 years. You know, when you can gather women together for almost 10 years to drink too much wine, eat too much food, and read books, it's a phenomenal achievement.
All the things I love.
Hello. I'm mummy, auntie, friend, a church person, and really someone who really, really cares deeply about other people.
And I think that's, I mean, it's certainly, you know, I'm sure testament to the work that you do with clients all over the world. And I suppose in your work as a therapist, what would you say have been, you know, particularly when we're thinking about women, given the backdrop that we, you know, are having this conversation against. So having come through a pandemic, a really difficult time for lots of us, men and women. And now we're seeing all of this data and all of this, these articles and headlines talking about the Great Resignation. We've seen the impact on women's finances, on women's wealth during that period, and now in the midst of this raging cost of living crisis that is really squeezing the purses of many of us, what would you say, you know, that you see as some of the common themes that emerge from a mental well-being perspective among your client base, and I think particularly with women?
You know, that's a really great question, because I see women of different ages and stages in life, which is an absolute privilege. And what I would say is, you know, when it comes from the themes, not being enough, not feeling enough. And here's the irony. For the most part, they have enough. So this is not really about, oh, do they have enough of these material objects? They're not feeling and being enough. But of course, with the current financial situation, which is right at this point global, that's squeezing in also into not having enough. But I think the being and the feeling enough are really, really significant, because as we, you know, we go on and we talk about finances and being unapologetic and all those really wonderful things, if you show up not feeling and being enough, that's the trajectory, that's your starting point when you start to make decisions, right? And so it's what I notice with the clients that I see, it's like this overall sense of deficiency, lack, but again, not necessarily always from a material perspective, but often more or less tied to a sense of like worth and value.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'm sure, you know, it's certainly relatable from my perspective. I'm sure there are listeners that are nodding their heads along as you're speaking. And I think, you know, particularly when we think about our careers and, you know, fusing together these different aspects of our beings, you know, you've got work life for lots of us and home life as well, and our identities in these different realms. You know, one of the things that, you know, a theme that is quite often pinned on women, which I always resist very strongly, is this idea of imposter syndrome. But then I suppose tied very closely to that is self-sabotage, which I from my own personal experience is something that I, you know, I'm regularly having to confront myself about. Or we hold ourselves to impossibly high expectations. To what extent do you think this is a result of external influences? So, you know, friends, family, society, and how much is it a result of the pressures that we put ourselves under for no good reason, because nobody else actually has those expectations of us?
Yeah, self-sabotaging behavior is so curious. Like, I almost want to step back a little bit. And when we think about what self-sabotaging behavior is, it's so again, it's common. You even confessed to it, and I've done it as well too, right? It's often correlated with a positive goal. That's the part where, like, hold on, can we just sort of stop and pause for a second? It's often correlated with a positive goal. So think about, you know, going to the gym, working out, because really weight is such a universal thing for so many people, right? And you get so close to that target of where you want to be in terms of weight, and then you come home and you maybe binge on something sweet, salty, high calorie snacks, you know, or you're out of debt, you've cleared the credit cards, and you go on a shopping binge. So what I've noticed is that clients will often engage in, we will often engage in self-sabotaging behavior when we're so close to finally achieving that goal we wanted, right? I've done it myself. You know, I'm in good financial standing. My credit cards are kind of clear. And I'm like, let's see what I could go and buy, right? You know, I do not need anything. I really don't. But I might as well get it. And here's the thing. I don't need it. Yeah, I don't even really deserve it in the sense I really have everything I need. I've lost sight of that initial goal, be it be debt-free, be it have a clutter-free house, being achieving a particular weight or whatever the case may be, right? So it really is tied to this notion of this goal. It's about getting really close to what we want. And then we sort of stop ourselves in our track when we're really close to it. So it does relate to high expectations. It also relates again to value and worth. Do I deserve to be in this particular situation, this goal that I am moving towards? And so when you talk about that expectation piece, it's really interesting, because I sort of rattle around in my head and I'm like, okay, some of these expectations aren't like what we normally would think of. For example, I see an image of a woman looking a particular way and I want to achieve that. What people are saying to me, what women are saying to me is that, you know, here's something I want to be. And I say, well, what is it? Fulfilled. Because they saw it on some social media post. But they can't sort of define what it is. It's this kind of abstract concept of happiness, and they continue to miss it because they haven't properly defined it. So there's that society, the new societal expectation is you're supposed to be fulfilled, happy, and all these enlightened pieces, and they don't really tell you how. And so women find themselves, why am I not as fulfilled as this person I saw on Instagram who's taking a jet to Tahiti and, you know, sipping a cocktail on the side of the beach?
Yeah, no, that, you know, everything that you've said there really resonates very strongly. I mean, just to pick up on one of the themes that you, or one of the things that you said around the extent to which we deserve, the extent to which we are deserving of things. And I think in the example that you gave, you were talking about, actually, I don't need any of this stuff. So what am I buying it for? And, you know, how closely correlated is this with the specific goals that I have in mind, whether they be for my life or, you know, from a financial perspective. But the reason I was particularly triggered by the word deserve, or why it's kind of triggered a line of, you know, thinking in my mind, is that I think for lots of us as women, we feel so undeserving so much of the time. And I wonder where some of that comes from. Based on your experience, Gillian, where do you think some of that feeling of being undeserving or unworthy comes from, when for the most part, we're running ourselves off a cliff daily, trying to cater to everybody's needs, everybody's expectations, and putting ourselves at the bottom of the to-do list all the time?
I think it comes from two places. And you just said it, catering. I think women being socialized as little girls will think of the other person's perspective, and maybe, you know, always put that person first. So there's that childhood upbringing coupled with oftentimes for that mothering piece, right? It can, you know, especially for your mother. I sort of liken it to when my son was really young, I always had these big purses because I didn't know if he would need a toy or a Kleenex or a snack or, you know, a bottle of water. So, you know, basically I'm breaking my shoulder with this massive bag because I'm walking around with the what if. What if he needs it? What if he has a runny nose, right? And then when he didn't, as he got older and he didn't need that, and I didn't have to be in this what if caring position, I'm still walking around this big bag, and at one point I emptied it, and I'm like, this kid, I don't know, he's like in high school, why am I carrying around these toys and Kleenex and what ifs? And for me, it was when I moved to a really smaller bag, because I think it's very symbolic, because the only person
it is,
I have
symbolic
to, right, the only person I have to take care of is me now.
I'm sure all mothers everywhere are like, oh my God, the day that we had to get rid of the frigging baby bag with all the stuff. And you're like, why am I carting all this stuff around? I mean, I'm sure most of us, many of us will have teenagers and we'll still be carrying around this massive bag with all the stuff. You know, crazy. But you're right. It's a perfect metaphor for the baggage that we carry. And we just need to put the bag down.
Exactly. Because we want to be readily available for that need. I want to know that if there's a runny nose, I have Kleenex. Well, if there's a runny nose, he also has a sleeve. Like, I mean, in all due respect, right? Like, but no, I've got to have a fresh Kleenex that has the aloe vera and the, like, there is always, and I think we're in that ready to jump in and kind of, and then as time goes on, depending on our relationships, you know, and so on and so forth, it intensifies this need to be there for that other person. Mm-hmm. So if you're always there for other person than other people, you always end up being put behind. Your needs are always kind of last.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, even as you were speaking, I was thinking to myself, okay, so imagine if you were your own client as a therapist.
Okay. Sorry, continue.
If you were your own client, because I think people assume they'll look on the outside, from the outside looking in, and they'll go, oh my gosh, Gillian's amazing. And, you know, she's got these glittering credentials. She's done so many wonderful things in her career. I would love to emulate that success. Don't really know how. I'm exhausted just thinking about it. They assume you have everything together. People assume I have everything together. Mm-hmm. What was the conversation we had just before we started this? We were like, oh my gosh, it's hot. I was like, I'm a hot mess. Like, I cannot be on video right now. I was sending you the podcast questions on the train. We are just pulling everything together and making it happen. But I think it's easy for people to assume that everything is mega polished, like it's a well-oiled machine. Nothing ever falls through the cracks. Nothing ever goes wrong. And the reality, I think, for lots of us is that, you know, sometimes we're having to, you know, be agile. We've got to move and shift and respond to things, you know, all the things, and juggle all the balls simultaneously. But as a therapist, I'm sure people assume, particularly in your case, that from a mental well-being perspective, you've got everything together, never doubt yourself. Is that true? What would you tell yourself if you were your own client?
Okay, So some clients will come to me and say, you know, I can't do XYZ unless I have all my ducks in a row, right? You know that expression, right? I'm like, ducks in a row? My life is basically chickens in the yard. Like, there's no way we're getting them in a row, okay? As long as they stay in the yard, I'm living with that, right? So even dispelling this notion that, okay, if everything sort of lines up, no, it's not going to happen. So I'm always cobbling myself together, you know? I'm so glad you asked it the way you did, because I refuse to continue the perpetuation of this image of no struggle. You know, it's like the person who says, no, I eat all hamburgers and french fries and Coke and I continue to lose weight. You're not talking about the exercising and the sweating and the meals that you don't have, right? I think it's this image, and I love what, your discourse, your narrative, what you're putting out there, because you're saying, can we just really talk about the honest truth? I cobble myself together, right? I have struggles and I have doubts. They ebb and they flow in terms of intensity and how much they actually disrupt my day to day. And it really depends on the day of the week, right? But I flow with it. As a therapist, I'm aware of it. I don't resist it. I acknowledge it. I usually, like I tell my clients, I'll say, if you have doubts and anxious feelings, invite it in and tell it to take a seat. Come on in and have a seat. Just relax while I get some work done. You know, it's this whole notion of doing it in spite of feeling XYZ, because so many people are waiting for this moment where they don't feel the fear and they don't feel the doubt and they feel perfect. You know, the sun's got to be at this certain altitude and there's all this alignment. It's not going to happen. You're going to be waiting a really, really long time, right? So you do it despite that.
I love that. There is so much truth in that. And particularly your point about, you know, while we're waiting for all of the stars to align and for everything to be perfect. And when, you know, our children are old enough or our relationship is perfect, ooh, or we've got that perfect promotion or we've lost 10 pounds or, you know, whatever, like we've got this additional qualification. And by the time we've done all that, we're like, okay, so now I'm 85. It's really important that we are, you know, breathing life into our existence every single day. And I particularly like that analogy you gave about telling doubt to kind of take a seat, because you've got things to do. You sit there in the corner. I'm over here. I've got things to do. So fine. If you want to be in the room and watch me, that's okay. But I'm still going to get on with what I'm doing. And I love that. I think there's something about stepping outside yourself and, you know, really imagining all of these things kind of floating around and just telling them to get on the bench.
Yes.
So that, if you had to give a framework or kind of, you know, some top tips that women listening or anybody listening, okay, because I recognize that there are non-women who are listening to this podcast as well, how would you frame it? So kind of three simple things that you might say to people that might significantly improve their mental health. And I think you've given one there already, which is to recognize that actually we're not trying to slay every single beast. We shouldn't have the expectation we're going to slay every single beast. Sometimes it's just about telling them to park themselves somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What would you say?
You know what? I'm going to put a little caveat in there and I hope you don't mind. And
no.
I'm going to go with, I know your audience is really drawing really big. And the reason why some of these tips are for women is because of socialization. So you have to remember that the women who are listening today have been socialized a particular way. And because of the way they were socialized, more statistically, more women think a particular way than men. And that's just really how it is. Is it evolving? Is it changing? For sure. But we still find as women, we do find ourselves kind of, for lack of a better word, trapped in old ways of being and thinking. So, you know, speaking to a broad audience, but also recognizing that kind of unique space that we as women occupy in terms of our thinking and where we prioritize ourselves within the family and whatnot, right? So I think take care of yourself first. The operative word here is first, you know, just like the instructions that you get on an airplane, right? Mask comes down. And I use this all the time in therapy. I'll look at my client. I'm like, okay, when you're on the plane, what do they tell you about the mask with instructions? And they look at me. I'm like, put it on first. Why? Because you are of no value to your, if you're on the plane with your child and you're passed out, you can't put the mask on them. So for you to run yourself to the point where you end up sick in bed or God forbid in the hospital, then you are of no value for the family that you were working hard for. So put yourself first. And that is really hard. You would be surprised how hard that one is. The next thing I would say is reach out. Like literally reach out. I don't know if it was the pandemic that sort of have kicked it, but a lot of people are like, well, I don't really feel connected to people. I'm really feeling kind of lonely. And these are people who are married, large families, have jobs and whatnot. The loneliness is surprising me. And the loneliness is not just a geographic space, like you live alone in a flat or an apartment, but people truly not feeling connected. And when we don't feel connected with others, we don't feel connected with our thoughts, our belief system. So we can't even check and see, you know, like, what am I thinking? So many women are like, I'm thinking this, but I must be the only one. Well, again, I'm privileged to talk to so many people as a therapist that I'm like, no. The last 40 people I spoke to said the same thing, but we're in this place of isolation. So reach out. And also that includes reach out for professional support. And you know, if anything I could say, a nugget I could say is we need to demystify therapy because, you know, I love it when people come and say, I've never done therapy before. What is this thing? Well, it's this not only like professional, but this is an objective view. I get to listen to you, hear what you're thinking and sort of reframe it, challenge it, give it back to you in a different format and also your blind spot. So, you know, reach out so that you're not grappling with thoughts, overwhelmed by feelings and things like that. And I think the last thing I would say that I'm hoping that this is kind of complimentary, it feels like building blocks, right? Is ignore the traffic noise. And the traffic noise is basically anything that disrupts what you're doing. So you're really shutting out what doesn't serve you, what distracts you, what moves you away from what you're supposed to be doing. So if you think, you know, you're living on a really busy street, you're hearing the sirens and the constructions and all the noise, and as you close the window, the noise gets dimmer and dimmer until, if you've got really good windows, you don't hear it anymore. And I think that's what we need to do, is basically ignore the traffic noise.
I love everything that you've said just then. It's relatable for so many of us, I think, particularly as you've outlined. And thank you for, you know, qualifying at the beginning that actually there really is a significant need for us to be very specific and very focused when we are talking to women. I mean, women are obviously is the business that Raincheck was built to serve. And of course, women account for the vast majority of our listenership. And you're quite right. Through socialization, we have become accustomed to putting ourselves last. I love the airplane analogy because, you know, and particularly when we become mothers, but even for women that are not mothers, we have just been socialized and conditioned to put ourselves second, third or fourth. Sometimes when we don't even make it on the list at all. And exactly as you say, you know, we are no good to anyone else if we are nothing to ourselves. So it's really important, you know, to think about how we can apply some of these things to ourselves. And, you know, what you said about, you know, when women come to you and they're like, oh gosh, you know, I feel like I'm the only one that thinks this or feels this. Everybody else looks like they're smashing it. And you are able to cut through all of that and say to them, no, actually the last 40 people that I spoke to said the same thing. But of course there's a bit of ego that's associated with it, of course. And, you know, part of it is, you know, being in silos and thinking, oh my God, I'm the only one that's suffering. And it's such a lonely place to be in. But even that insight alone, it's not that we want to know other women are suffering, but you want to know that you are not unique in having some of the challenges that I think, you know, we all encounter throughout our lives. So Gillian, I mean, you know, outside of your professional career, you are a mother, you are a friend, you're a sister, an auntie, godmother, all of the things. What would you say you've learned about yourself as you've progressed through life, through your career? You know, how do you bridge all of these different identities? How do they contribute to how you show up in the world?
I think, you know, you speak... You know, if I could sort of stop and sort of deconstruct your podcast and what you're doing, we're speaking from a very privileged place, because it almost takes a certain amount of time to be able to look back. You need to be able to look back on something. So if you're driving and you basically haven't moved your car and you look in the rearview mirror, you're going to just see your your flat, your house. Mm-hmm. But until you start to drive down the road, you look back. But if you, as life goes on and you drive further and further, you have more to look back on. And I think that's the beauty of kind of being at this age and stage in life. You get to look back and go, oh yeah, university. And when I was, you know, single and, you know, doing, just launching my career. And, you know, as I was, you know, becoming a mother and on all those pieces, we get to now start to build on those pieces. And if you do it right, you get to look back and reflect and go, wow, look at my character and who I have become. And so really what you're talking about is a really beautiful self-reflection piece, which all of us should do. So if you're listening to this and you're 20 and you're like, how come I don't have this rich reflection? Because you just don't have enough in your rearview mirror. When you're 30, you got a little bit more. When you're 40, you have that much more, which is why being able to celebrate getting older is because we've got more in our rearview mirror, right? And it's so, so beautiful. And so when I, you know, when I think about all those stages, it allows me to be that much more multidimensional. It allows me to realize I'm a complex person. Mm-hmm. And I've got these really neat things that I've picked up and learned along the way. And I sort of had to hone it down to one thing. Being a mom has just been an incredible journey. You're a mom of young daughters. I'm a mom of a son who's older. And really, if you can get a good positionality, he's taught me so much. This also goes for aunties. It goes for uncles. It goes for godparents. If you've got a kid in your life and you sit back, you're going to learn a lot from them. Mm-hmm. And he's taught me to be courageous, strong, not give up, lighthearted, and not take things seriously. You know, when he was younger, kind of that, you're not there yet, but that kind of middle school age where you're getting them to do chores around the house and things like that. And I'm like, hey, did you clean your room? Yeah, yeah, mom, I got this. You know, did you do homework? Yeah, yeah, mom, I got this. And it got to the point where I would actually use it as my keynote. So when I'm out doing speaking engagements, conferences, and whatever, I'd say, yeah, my son's notorious for like, yeah, yeah, mom, I got this. And why I bring that up is that I'd say, hey, did you clean your room? Yeah, yeah, mom, I got this. And he'd go out, whatever I go. His room wasn't clean, but he convinced me. And what I learned from, yeah, yeah, mom, I got this, is that he said it with so much confidence. Mm-hmm. He alluded so much confidence that actually I believed him. It was remarkable. And I'm like, you know, getting past the kind of frustration of not doing something I'd asked, it was how he carried himself with that much confidence. Because I think, you know, if it was me as his age, I would have scurried. Oh, you want me to clean the room? I would have just scurried and done it in fear, whatever. And he's fearless. And I'm like, wow, what is it like to be that fearless? And so whenever I'm sort of struggling with my doubts, I'm like, I got this. I don't know what I got, but I got this.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. I mean, there is power in conviction, isn't there? I think sometimes, you know, when we are wishy-washy or when we, you know, when a bit of doubt creeps out, because, you know, then if you're almost inviting doubt from other people.
Yeah.
But if you put yourself in a position where, you know, you say things with such conviction, then people have no option really but to believe you.
Right.
And then that in turn gives you greater confidence in yourself, which you then, you know, it becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that, yeah. I mean, exactly as you describe, being a parent, or I think having, as you say, small people in your life in any capacity, the things that they teach you about yourself and about life and about priorities can be really profound, because they are so straightforward and direct. They're untethered to the politics of life, the politics of family dynamics, or, you know, relationship disputes or friendship disputes. They just say things as they are. They cry when they feel pain or when their feelings are hurt or when they're upset, and they resolve it and they move on. But, you know, they don't have all of the baggage, all of the mental baggage that we accumulate over years and years. You know, even, you know, in looking in our rearview mirror, yes, there are all of the benefits of being able to look back and go, right, they were the potholes. I missed them, but now I can avoid them in future, looking forward. But also, you know, there's all that stuff that, you know, that's in the boot. It's in the boot of the car that we're just driving around with all the time. So it's really an important thing to be able to do that self-reflection. And you're quite right. It is a privilege to be able to do it too.
Yeah.
So, Gillian, of course, this is a podcast about women and money. So I suppose, how would you describe your relationship with money?
Again, depending on the day. Right? So honest, right? Depending on the day, it has, I remember my father saying, what was the expression he used to always say? Money burns a hole in your pocket, right? And I never understood, but it was this idea that if he gave me, you know, a certain amount of money, I would just go out quickly and spend it. I think that was really a reflection of just kind of a carefree, youthful way of being. And that has evolved, right? And I think our relationship with money does evolve, and it evolves based on life circumstances, right? And how we do that. And I would say that my relationship with money now has evolved. And also when we get older and you have this, there's this, always this conversation. I was actually talking to, with some friends about this, is if you really want your relationship with money to change, have a discussion with your financial planner who will look you dead in the eye and say, what does retirement look like? Mm-hmm. That will spiral you into so much fear.
Right. Like,
I just got my job last week. What are you talking about? I worked out for a tire. What? So again, one of these beautiful societal norms that just sort of thrusts you to think quite differently. If you again have the privilege to go into home ownership, or if you have children, some of these things sort of thrust you to be a little bit more serious. I can't have money burn a hole in my pocket because of all these other responsibilities and things like that. But, you know, when I think about the relationship with my money, can I talk about my mom? Can I talk about mom here? Is this okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Because
we love to hear about moms.
Well, actually, you were the one first. I heard your first podcast and you were the one who talked about, I think it was your grandmother.
Yes.
And I thought, hold up, I got one of them in my family too. Mm-hmm. So when my relationship with money also came from my mom, but I did not realize it until probably like yesterday, because I didn't think deeply about it, right? And I love these talks where we could truly think deeply about what we already know. Because what we already know is just, we just take it for granted. But if we can actually stop and deconstruct and think about it, it's really powerful. And so my mom, okay, so a little bit of an immigrant diaspora at this time, from Barbados, went to England, which is why I have about 200 cousins in England. But then her and my father came to Canada. So there's like two of us here in Canada, right? So, and that's a very common, at that time in the 60s, it was a very common immigrant route, okay? And you would probably likely know that as well too. You know, she came mm-hmm. to Canada, and of course her credentials weren't recognized, right? So you're talking about that immigrant experience where you have to start from scratch. So long story short, she became like a nurse's aide at a hospital, and she was there for 40 years. Okay, just outstanding. And what I did not realize, that out of the corner of my eyes, for decades, I watched her wake up every day, put on her nurse's uniform. No, sorry. Every Sunday, she would iron it. Starch spray and iron it. I've got inhaled lungs of starch spray. Starch spray and iron it, right? The white stockings, the white shoes. So it might evoke some memories for some of you, depending on where you are in your life. And she would always have her uniform pressed, and she would get it. She'd put on her get her purse on. She didn't drive at the time, and she would walk across. She'd take the bus and take several buses, blah, blah, blah. And she did that every working time. And sometimes she would say, listen, I'm doing a double shift.
Wow.
And I watched her. No sick days. Okay. Talk Gosh. About tenacious, talk about showing up, talk about consistency. But here's the kicker. She took vacations like nobody else I know. Right? This is a Black immigrant woman. And by this time, she was divorced. Okay. So she's by herself. And I remember I'd be like, hey, mommy, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to China. I'm going to Japan. I'm going wow. to Australia. I'm going to Egypt. I'm going on cruises. Listen, my mother had her travel agent on speed dial.
She would have been my grandma's bestie.
Okay.
Yeah. They would have been besties. Absolutely.
My brother and I were at this point where like, you're kind of spending all of our inheritance. It was a joke, right? It was a joke, but it was this idea that, you know, she would just go. She would work and then she would travel. She would work, then she would travel. But she was super, super careful with her money. She had her place where she lived, a townhouse, like paid off. And she also bought a house, like a condo house in Florida, cash. Okay.
Wow.
Right? Wow. Is it right? And so she also taught me about the purpose of work and why we work. Right? Just like, wow. So this is why you're doing it, right? And now my mother has passed several years. And one of the things, you know, at her funerals, you know, her granddaughter went through all her stuff and took out, she would take postcards. Do you remember postcards?
Yes. Oh my gosh, so retro. I love postcards.
Right? Of everywhere she went, and we put it up on a bulletin board. We had to ask the funeral home for like 3 or 4 big stand bulletin boards, because, and you looked, and not only did she go to places, she went to Broadway shows, all of them, name it, she went.
Wow.
Name it, she went. And I'm like, oh. And when I was looking at this, I was like, this is what we're supposed to be doing. This mm-hmm. is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that, Gillian, because that brings me really nicely onto our next question, which is around, you know, and there's a lot of chat at the moment via social media and elsewhere. We've come through these various epochs, I think, in terms of time, you know, periods of time in the digital realms, where we've moved from this kind of girl boss hustle mode, you know, be constantly, you know, striving and hustling and, you know, never giving up and all of the things, which is wonderful. You know, lots of people that are stepping out on faith and becoming entrepreneurs. But at the same time, it seemed to imply that we had to sacrifice our well-being, some of the quality of life aspects that are, you know, things that are really important to us in pursuit of financial wealth and at the expense of all other aspects of our well-being. And as you know, Raincheck is all about, you know, thinking about how your financial well-being acts as a conduit to all other aspects of your wellness. So one really doesn't work without the other. You know, you can be in pursuit of financial wealth and at the same time, your mental well-being is deteriorating because you are not applying appropriate self-care techniques and practices to make yourself feel good about what you're doing. So how does this manifest itself in your life, Gillian? I mean, you and I have talked before about the soft life and, you know, what that might mean for you. But if you had a magic wand and could conjure up your dream reality, what would that look like for you? And what, I suppose, is one action that you are currently taking or that you intend to take to help you get there? Because I think it's really important that we are able to daydream and imagine and doodle, you know, in the way you would doodle in your notebook at school, like doodle in our minds and just come up with the things that we have parked into the recesses of our imaginations because we think, impossible, can't do it now. I can't do it as a wife. I can't do it as a mother. Let me forget it. And so I think sometimes people look at me as a bit of an outlier because I do what I want. And I, you know, I discuss it with the girls, but ultimately I'm going to do what I want. Once it suits us all, we are going to do it. But I think for women, you know, there's quite a number of us that we abandon our dreams and we can't even conceive of what our dream reality might look like, let alone what steps we might take to accomplish that. So I think for you, Gillian, how do you, you know, strike that balance in all these things? What does that soft life look like? What would be your dream reality and how can you get there?
Okay, I'm going to answer this like in 30 different ways and you need to eventually bring me back. Okay, I'm going to wander off. I've gotten off the road, off the shoulder of the road, and we're going to go down a path and we're going to come back because okay. You touched on so many points. I can't let any of them go. First of all, you talked about your way and you're like, I'm going to do what I want, but of course I'm going to consult with the girls. So, you know, when I look at my success, I'm determined, I'm stubborn. I will pursue things. Okay. These are qualities, especially coming from a Caribbean home as a young girl, these are not promoted. Okay. Let's just be real.
We are outliers,
right? What do you mean you have a different opinion than me? excuse me? What? And things like that. So they weren't nurtured. So you push them aside. That also goes with things about dreaming. I love dreaming. Girl, listen, if I want to stump one of my clients, I'll go, if you had to dream about something and things were different, how would they look? I'll probably be sitting in 5 minutes of dead silence at that point because we've also been robbed of dreaming, of visioning. So you think of yourself in school, you're doodling, and what does the teacher say? Hey, come back to class. Stop. Hey, where are you? I'm dreaming. I'm thinking about what if. There's no boundaries. This is where this creativity comes from. Like, how do I move into this beautiful space? So ease, you can't just talk about ease. You got to talk about what am I bringing into it? So, because I don't, if I just start talking about ease, it's going to assume that I've always been able to do this. So what I've had to do is go back and revisit and unearth qualities that have been dampened, I've been told to shrink, that I've been told are not ladylike, that I've been told or maybe are aggressive or they're too ambitious or it doesn't fit you. And I've had to dig them up, dust them off, and go, come on, we're going towards ease. Okay, mm-hmm. We're going to move towards ease, right? And so when we move towards this dream, it's like moving towards the sun. It's too bright. I want it, but it's really, really bright. Hence, the self-sabotaging behavior starts to kick in. Mm. So when we're able to dream, the next step is, okay, can you really move towards it? Because here's the existential question. But what if I get it?
Yes.
What if I get the thing I've always wanted? And here's why it's such a problematic question. Maybe nobody else in my family has. Maybe I'm the only one who has it. And maybe there are people who are saying, how come you and not me? Oh, you're just so lucky. And you know it wasn't luck. Mm-hmm. Right? So the whole pursuit of ease is very complex. Okay, because it does come with a lot of baggage, because oftentimes you have to leave people behind. You have to leave ideas and values and old ways of being and old family narratives. It could be actually loved ones who are like, what are you doing that for? Huh, okay. That's my favorite. Huh, okay. It's like loaded, right? Okay.
So loaded.
If you think you can do that, whatever. What? Like, it just, and so... when we move, there's always this kind of roadblock. People often feel that roadblocks are these perilous things, but it tends to mean that you're moving closer to what you want, because it means you're breaking down. You've not been there before. You've not been there before. So it's so fascinating. So, you know, just in terms of that magic wand for me, as you know, it's a relocation, right? It's a relocation also to the Caribbean, and having the luxury of living both in Canada and the Caribbean. And it has even taken me a while to articulate it.
Mm.
I can dream it. Here's the beauty thing about dreams. They stay inside of me. They never come out.
Mm-hmm.
People will say to me, here's the really interesting thing. So let's just say we're doing some trauma work, and someone may say to me, if I say it, it's going to be real. Okay. So we're going to put that one aside for a second. It goes the same thing with dreams. If I say it, then it becomes real. Yeah. That's the whole purpose. Mm-hmm. That we need a workshop where people are like, yeah, say what you want, because the moment I say it, and I tell you it, you hold me accountable. And actually, just as a note, audience, she does hold me accountable. I think this question was actually planted. It's this idea where, okay, so what are you doing about it? I don't know. It was just a dream. Leave me alone. Oh, no. So you're now actually asking me what I'm going to do about it? It's like, you actually really want me to action this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We're going to make it happen. Yes.
Those are big ahas. Those are massive, which is why a lot of people have dreams that are never birthed.
So true. So, so true. It's frightening, isn't it? It's as awful as for lots of us, you know, if you're in a situation that is uncomfortable or not fulfilling, not serving you in the right way, whether at work or at home, it's almost like we'd rather sit in the discomfort, in the familiar discomfort, then leap for the potential and, of course, unfamiliar joy, because we're like, but it might not be joyful. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but what if it is joyful?
Right? What
and
if
that's
it is?
That's the switch. That's the switch. That was brilliant, Gillian. Beautiful answer. So coming back to the money, the money that's going to help us get there. What would you say, you know, in terms of some of the financial decisions that you've made over the course of your life, and thinking about your investments, you know, your best and your worst investment, and it could be anything. I mean, it doesn't have to just be financial investments. But what would you say has been the best investment you've made, and what has been your worst?
Okay. Best investment, education. I like to collect degrees. Like, if I didn't have to pay for...
That's a true immigrant right there.
What will I do? Another degree. Will I do? Another degree. And yeah, it's an interesting journey. You know, I have a degree in psychology. I've got another degree in social work. I've got a master's in social work. Halfway a PhD, and I stopped it. So you see, collecting degrees. Because, you know, I'm just learning, right? I am a lifelong learner. I would actually rather say the other best investment is my son. Mm. Okay? His dreams, his goals, his aspirations. If you have children, invest in them. And what I mean by that, we're not talking about cutting them a check for like $100,000. Pour into them their character, their values. It is about helping to give them critical thinking, the ability to look at something. And this is not obedience. No. Critical thinking. The ability to look at something and go, is that really right? Even if it's coming from the mouth of an adult, right? That's the investments. So those are like two investments that I think are my best investments, at least.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I hear you completely on the education. I'm right there with you. You know, you said something that, you know, completely as an aside, but I think is probably something that lots of us will be nodding our heads about, which is this idea of critical thinking. Ooh. You know, when we live in this world, in this age of cancel culture and an inability to be discerning about the things that, you know, the media that we consume, and, you know, if somebody has a point of view that we don't necessarily agree with, suddenly we want to cancel them or we want to block them and, mm-hmm. you know, all of this kind of thing. And I think, you know, instilling in future generations the notion of critical thinking and giving them an ability to use their judgment, use their discernment, just makes for much better and richer discussions all around. Because you don't need to agree with someone to have a good conversation with them and to have your mind open to another possibility. So, yeah, I love that. So, yeah. Gillian...
Worst?
Sorry, go on.
Are you going to worst now?
Full confession. We're going to worst.
Okay, the worst, and here's a caveat. I actually live with no regret. Like seriously, I actually don't believe, you know, people are like, oh, I regret doing that. I actually don't believe in that. I think we all learn from mistakes. We all pick ourselves up. We all have mistakes. So I don't actually have regret. So the worst investment was actually a financial investment. It was actually mm-hmm. a financial investment. And it's actually quite hilarious. So I purchased some stocks. So just a bit of history. One of my little, I have, my resume is checkered with so many things. It's checkered with so many things. I actually went to an employment counselor once. And this was my younger days. And he's like, oh, you have so many things. How will an employer or a potential employer know what you want to do? It was very frowned upon because it was very eclectic, but I'm so blessed today that it was eclectic. And one of them was a stint I did at a financial agency. It was a financial agency. So I was around stocks and purchases and all that wonderful. So I got really curious and I really wanted to know about the various products. So I'm just really fortunate about that. So, you know, talking to guys in suits, having lunch with them, and like, here's a stock tip. And I'm like, okay, let's try this. And actually, the history is through this very young and kind of carefree way, I put some money, bought a stock, and went boom, and I was able to buy my car with it, my first little car. I always joke it was more rust than pink, but it was mine, and it was my first car. And so I've always, that's always been who I have, that's always been me. So to no surprise, so here I am currently, I have a healthy portfolio and it includes stocks, you know, company stocks. Again, lifelong learner. I like to do my own research. I want to know how businesses are doing, et cetera, so on, so forth. So here I am, balanced portfolio, doing good things. I know them really well. I know why I'm buying it. And so I let my guard down and I start to listen to people talk about the, you know, types of like more technology stuff and like all of that new, you know, stuff that I truly don't know much about. And I really thought I was missing out, which I never, ever do. It was a really a true point of vulnerability. So I bought some. I bought a particular stock. It was going to be the new XYZ. And I lied to you not, the day I bought it, that ticker tape dropped. It just kept going and going. And every day I've watched it go down. And it was, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm sorry, but it was actually quite hilarious. But I also, and you have spoken to about this too, because we as women do have this. And I'm like, it's okay. It's balance. Mm. It's just a portion.
Right.
It wasn't my entire house. It yes. wasn't, you know, I didn't put, you know, also, it is okay. It is, there was a piece that I lost, okay? Yeah.
And that piece will be offset by other aspects of your portfolio.
Thank you, right? Balance.
Diversification is key.
Bingo, right? And so I calmly, you know, sold what I had, sold at a loss, and purchased something else that I was more confident in. Here's my takeaway. My takeaway is not to not buy stocks. That's not the take. The takeaway is I overrode my own knowledge mm-hmm. for someone else's. What would have wow. happened if I just followed my own inkling? Everything else in my portfolio was doing well. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the irony is when I switched over to buy something else, the green is just been going up. What if I had followed initially my own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A real reality check around trusting your own judgment.
Yeah.
And sometimes, exactly as you say, sometimes it's not like the road to success, you know, isn't littered with these pitfalls and these kinds of, you know, us veering off path and off course. But as long as we veer ourselves back on course when we recognize it, it's all good. You know, if you hadn't done that, then you might always have felt like, you know, am I missing out on this? Am I? So it's reminded you of the need to trust yourself, to trust yes. yourself, to trust your judgment, and you pursue your own path and run your own race.
And there's that critical thinking, right? Because critical thinking allows you to look at the whole picture.
Mm.
Right? The whole picture. Because someone can listen to this and say, oh, what did I learn? I learned not to buy stocks. Then you missed it. Mm. You completely missed it. The really takeaway is that sometimes you will make what you feel is an informed decision and it just didn't have the best outcomes. And that is also okay. What is your recovery position? Rebalancing. But sometimes what we do as human beings, we're like, oh, I made a mistake. I will never do this again. See, I was wrong. I'm no good. I shouldn't, you know, like I told you, I can't manage money. And we go into this huge negative self-talk. And like, how'd you get yes. from there to here? How did you traverse from making a very human decision with human outcomes to I'm so terrible with money. I should never do da 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 to absolute.
Yes. Yeah. And we're so hard on ourselves. Yes. We can be so hard on ourselves. So yeah, I mean, I love the way that you're able to laugh it off. And I know that comes with experience as well. But an ability to laugh it off, an ability to reframe it in the context of I've learned something, I will apply that lesson to future investment decisions and just move forward. That I think is the best, you know, outcome that you could have hoped for from that experience. So thank you for sharing. I suppose, Gillian, my final question really is about, you know, as you know, we talk all the time about wanting to normalize this idea of women and wealth. It shouldn't be something that's viewed as vulgar. It shouldn't be something that's viewed as countercultural in any way. Wealth should be a word that we should feel that we have some stake in as well. So, you know, I recognize that wealth manifests itself in a multitude of different ways. What does it mean to be a wealthy woman to you? Would you consider yourself a wealthy woman on that basis?
Yes.
Love it.
Yes. I'm going in and I'm snatching it. Yeah, because I remember reading something, and I know I do not own this quote. It was a recent quote. I'm sure everybody has seen it. These days, quotes go everywhere. But it was this person wrote and said, I used to envy the woman with the big house, the expensive car, the luxury car, and the designer bag. Now I envy the woman who says she's going hiking on a Tuesday morning.
I love it.
Right?
Like, yes.
Again, if you pause and really thought that through, this is no longer about these materialistic things, but it's the time. Am I wealthy? Yes. Because oftentimes, because of the life I've now created, I'm oftentimes going to the gym when other people are commuting to work.
Yes.
Right? And okay, again, so let's go back to what you see on the surface versus like a duck, what's going on below. It doesn't mean that in the evening time I am working, probably when other people are watching TV after work, after their traditional 9-to-5. Likely, yes. Okay, one, because it's the nature of my job as a therapist. Mm-hmm. I tend to have more evening appointments, but it's also a matter of choice. I'm in charge of my schedule and what it looks like. So if I decide, next week I'm not going to work, I don't do it. So that really to me is wealth. I think it's choice, it's options, and so it leaves you with this ability to be as expansive as you want to be, because I think even as an entrepreneur and somebody who owns your own business, you could find yourself burning yourself out by pursuing too much because you want it all. And so there is this beautiful delicate balance. And so I feel I am wealthy because I have options and I have choices and I am using the God-given skills, passions, and abilities and that I have. And that's such a luxury. So it doesn't feel like work when I'm actually working.
I love that. And it's almost the truest and purest definition of wealth, isn't it? It's the ability to choose. It's that liberation from other people's expectations. It's liberation from, you know, the demands people place on your time and where you should be at what time and how many days vacay you can take and all of those things. And I think there is a real power and certainly wealth that comes from that liberation. So thank you for articulating that so beautifully. Gillian, so we have come to the end of our regular set of questions, but I do have three quick fire questions for you.
Yeah.
Quick fire. First thing that springs to mind. Okay. So if you were to host a dinner party, I imagine a dinner party at your house would be brilliant. So you're hosting a dinner party. Who's there and why? Can be past, present, celebrity, non-celebrity, anyone.
I'm terrible at this one, but I'm going to just do it anyhow. And I'm just terrible because you're not really being fair on me. But if I'm hosting a dinner party, I need Issa Rae there.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I need Michelle Obama there. Mm-hmm. You need to give me, who else do I want to be there? Shonda Rhimes. I want you there. Okay. I need to have people.
Thank you.
You know, when you don't stop talking and you interrupt each other and it just flows and you just keep going and you don't stop till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. You're like, wow, we need to stop now. We actually, because I just think these are, all of you, including, are individuals who bring so much to the table and have skills and capacities that I don't have. I want to sit at a table where I can learn. I do not want to be the smartest at the table. I don't want to be the most skilled at the table.
Oh my gosh, but we'll be looking, we'll just be there crying and saying, okay, Gillian, please give us the therapy.
Issa, are you listening?
But that sounds like a great dinner party. I love that. Okay, so my second question. If money is no object, what would you actually blow the budget on?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, boy. You know, the thing is, you're going to get creeped out by this.
Oh, God.
But I am telling you, I'm not a stalker. This is the truth. If we were on camera, I would show you pictures. I would have to say skincare.
Oh, my gosh. See? This is why we're spirit animals. This is why we're spirit animals.
I knew it.
Oh my God.
Because I heard you and I was like, that's me.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, makeup, really basic. In fact, I have to start throwing out makeup because I've just had it too long, right? I'm real basic, okay? Mm-hmm. Skincare, I don't play.
No.
Right? I don't, because it's your canvas.
Makes me happy.
The canvas has to be perfect before you layer on. So I'm really like, I am like, you know, my son's like, what are you doing? I'm going to bed and I'll shut the door. And like a half an hour later, he's like, what are you doing? I'm in the bathroom. Bro, I'm still going to bed. Just
because I got
right going through this. Because, and you know what?
I'm applying my serums, my business.
Hey, layers. Hey, sometimes just lay it all out. And you know what? That's self-care. That's actually because, and that's part of that beautiful routine that you use. And it's a different regime to wake up. You don't go to sleep with the same care products that you wake up on. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yes. Oh my gosh, you had me at skincare. So, okay. So our final question then, the book, podcast, or discovery that changed my life, maybe not changed your life, but what is a book, podcast, or discovery that you would swear by, that you would say has had a monumental impact on you?
There's so much. I'm actually looking at a stack of books. Like, I'm looking mm-hmm. at so many books in front of me. I'm looking through a bunch of books in front of me. I am. Okay. I'm going to put it out there. And I'm going to say that, and this is in all seriousness, because I take my words very, very seriously, is that I'm going to say is I've actually listened to your podcast several times, and I can't usually get past the first one, not your introductory one, but the first one. And the reason why I think it's so powerful is because you speak to something that has not been spoken before. I have read books on finances. I've heard stuff on finances before they were even podcasts. And what you have done is that you have invited our culture. You have invited our gender. You have decided to be bold enough to go into spaces that I still believe people, women aren't going into. Like the other day, I was talking with a group of women and I said, about stocks. And, oh, I wish I could invest in stocks. I don't know how to. Yeah, you do. You can Google it, actually. Mm-hmm. you can. You Google everything else, right? So it's this idea, what you have done with this podcast is that you've carved out this area and you have been tenacious. You have dug your heels in. You have repeated themes that I'm like, people, can we just start to listen to this? Because you are using language that we don't use. You offered up to me and you said, do you consider yourself, wealthy? And I'm like, yeah. It's like, thank you for giving that to me. I'll mm-hmm. snatch it out of you, right? Because I don't think if we're not talking about it, it's going to pass. It's going to pass like a subway train. You know, it's just going to pass us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to look at everybody else's wealth. So and how you articulate it. And when I listen to your podcast and when I listen how you talk to people and when I see you on Instagram, you continue to bring the same theme over and over and over again, but with depth and clarity that again brings in. I've never heard anybody talk about a black grandmother being the matriarchal right? wealth maker.
Yes.
Because if you would ask me the question, what I know about wealth, I'll say, well, I read some books by this particular author who's a big Wall Street, blah, blah, blah. But I got to bring my mother in because you brought your grandmother in.
Yes.
And again, I don't stroke egos. I have no time for that. But what you are doing is so, it requires a repeat. It requires a repeat. It requires layering on over and over. I tell you, I'm in my car and I'm replaying yours again. I can write a thesis. Maybe I'll go back and do my PhD. See, I can get another degree. God. See, I can.
I love it. I love it. Jillian, listeners, do you see what I mean when I say the Rainmakers, we are serious champions, cheerleaders, and supporters of one another. So when I tell you that my sessions with Jillian involve her coaching me as much as I'm coaching her, I am not joking. That wasn't just hyperbole. I meant it. Jillian, thank you so, so much. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for your energy as ever. Where can people find you, connect with you, work with you? Tell us all the places.
Yeah, I'm at jillianwells.ca. I do individual therapy. And we're going to put the couples on hold for a second. I also do couples therapy. But I do DEI wellness workshops. I have a kind of a special project coming down the pipeline. You stay tuned for that. You might even hear it through here. I am really there to support people, especially if they're doing really hard work like DEI work. So I'm in the mental health field just to support people. I think the more people who are supporting others and we can be the back support to others, then at the end of the day, we're all just going to do really, really well. So drop me a line, check out my website, and love to hear from you.
I love that, Gillian. Thank you so much for your time again. Enjoy the rest of your day.
And thank you for having me. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how RainCheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at RainCheck and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time. Thank you.